So we developed these five precepts as guidelines, things that might be helpful to caregivers in looking after their loved ones or for healthcare workers and working with people near the end of life. The first precept that we developed is welcome everything, push away nothing. Welcome everything, push away nothing. Sounds great, would make a terrific bumper sticker. The question is, how do we do this? I think what this is asking of us is for a kind of fearless receptivity. And what I mean by fearless is not that we're not afraid, it's that we're not defined by our fear. To welcome everything, push away nothing, means that we just have to be willing to meet what's arising, what we're being presented with in a given situation. It doesn't mean that we have to like it. It just means we have to be willing to meet it. In fact, I'd say it's not even our job to like it or dislike it or to approve of it or disapprove of it. It's just our task to really trust and pay careful attention to what's actually arising. The second precept that we developed was bring your whole self to the experience. Bring your whole self to the experience. To be someone who heals, and I think that's the work of being a companion to the dying, to be someone who heals, we have to include ourselves in the equation. This is really intimate work, and we can't do it from a distance. If we're going to meet someone else's pain and suffering with compassion, we have to investigate our own relationship to these issues. If someone's afraid, for example, and we say, I understand, and we haven't investigated our fear, they're going to smell our insincerity and our sentimentality. We won't be of very much help to them there. The third precept that we developed was, don't wait. Maybe this is my favorite. Mm-hmm. Don't wait. I'm not talking here about rushing through things. I'm speaking about when we're waiting, we're usually lost in some kind of expectation. Waiting for the next moment, we're missing this one. Waiting for the moment of dying, we often are missing all the moments in between. So what we're advocating for here in this precept is to be willing to be present with things as they're happening right now. You know, here's a story that might illustrate this. A while back, a friend of mine, actually a member of our board of directors, came to see me. His mom was very sick, close to the end of her life. She lived in Toronto. He lived in San Francisco. And he came to me and he said, the doctors have said that she has 6 weeks to live. What should I do? When should I go there? And I think this is a quandary a lot of us have. And so I listened to him and I said, tell me about it and tell me what the doctor said. And as he spoke, I mostly just watched his body. I listened to the tone of his voice. I heard the longing in his voice. And I said to him, you know, I think you should go tonight. Take the red eye. Get there tonight. He was very surprised at this, but he agreed to cancel his business the next day and fly. And at, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning, his plane touched down in Toronto, and at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, he was sitting with his mother when she died. Don't wait. I think what this precept is telling us is when there's someone we love, let's not wait to tell them that we love them. Yeah. And as it regards dying, let's not wait until we find ourselves on our own deathbeds to learn the lessons that death has to teach us about living fully. So that's the third precept, I think. The fourth is find a place of rest in the middle of things. We always think about rest as something we'll do when we go on a holiday or maybe when our list gets checked off. But I don't know about you, but my list never gets checked off.
No.
So finding a place of rest in the middle of things means that if we bring our attention fully and completely to what we're actually doing, we oftentimes find a kind of refreshment there, a revitalization there. When we're caring for someone that we love who's very, very sick, we don't have the luxury of going away. Sometimes we're on duty 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So we have to find a way of resting right in the middle of those activities. So what can be helpful there, I think, is to take small, everyday, ordinary activities and ritualize them in some way. the way we bathe our hands, the way we step over a threshold into a room, so that those very simple activities can be an object for our mindfulness and our attention, and sort of bring us back home to ourself regularly. And then the fifth and last precept is cultivate don't know mind. I felt obliged to put something Zen-like in this list. Cultivate don't know mind. You know, Zen is filled with this kind of doublespeak, and it's sometimes hard to understand, but I think what this is pointing us to is that when we don't know, we're more open to discovery. This kind of don't know isn't advocating ignorance or lack of skills. It's advocating a willingness to not be so wedded to our agenda. It's the willingness to enter into a room where someone is dying and discover, have a kind of beginner's mind. There's a corollary teaching that goes with this that says, not knowing is most intimate. And I think that what that's really suggesting is that when we don't know a thing or a person, we have to stay very close to it in order to get to know it. And so I think this precept, not knowing is most intimate, or cultivate don't know mind, is reminding us to relinquish for a while our agendas and step in with an open and receptive mind and heart, meeting the situation as it's arising. So those are the five precepts, and maybe they have usefulness around dying, and perhaps they have some usefulness at other times of our lives.
I would imagine it anytime. I actually wrote down a quote I had of yours, the heart has to be soft for anything to be free.
Don't you think that's true?
Totally.
I mean, you know, and our hearts aren't always soft. I mean, we have to acknowledge that. They are ever expanding and contracting. Yeah. In fact, if they weren't, our hearts would be in big trouble, huh?
Yeah.
But, you know, to soften our heart around the things that we have found unacceptable, unapproachable, this, I think, is extraordinarily healing.
Well, especially around, again, the death of someone, I think no matter how much we love that person, no matter how dear they are to us, there's a lot of conflicting feelings that come up around that time of life, that, you know, things that maybe should have been said and other things that could be said. And you actually address this in the CDs, talking about letting the dying person reminisce, but also allow for memories to resurface that allow for reconciliation, even though they may not seem like it's even the best thing to do to bring them up. I think if your heart's open and those things spontaneously emerge with the heart open, there may be then that allowance for the reconciliation that you spoke of.
I think that's a possibility.
I mean, no,
if we're with people who are dying in a way that they can trust, if we're with them in a way where we're not projecting our story onto them, we're not trying to drive home some agenda, we're more open and responsive to their needs, then they'll be more confident in their ability to speak to us. They won't be so afraid of our judgment.
Right.
And so I think sometimes when people are reminiscing or reflecting about their lives, one of the things that arises for them are things in their lives that were kind of difficult. And more often than not, I think, people quite naturally turn toward forgiveness, either the extending of forgiveness or the request for forgiveness. And I think this is a pretty common experience in around the time of dying. In fact, I would say that probably 90% of the cases of people I've worked with, forgiveness has been part of their dying process.
Yeah, you illustrated a beautiful example of that with the cowboy on the CDs.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
It'd be great if you would.
Well, you know, there was a woman that we cared for. Stella was her name, one of our earliest patients. And she and her brother had been estranged for some years. They hadn't seen each other, in fact, in 20 years. And so we got a hold of him. He was a cowboy. He rode the rodeo circuit. And he showed up at the doors of Zen Center one day with a big hat, silver belt buckle, snakeskin boots. And he said, "What kind of a place is this? You got my sis." And I invited him in, and he stayed with us for about 10 days. And one afternoon we were sitting in the garden, just shooting the breeze, and I got up to go home, and he turned to me and he said, "I want to tell her it, but I can't tell her it." Just like that, you know. So I sat back down. And I said, "You know, Rusty, if there's something you want to tell your sister, there's not a lot more time. And so, don't miss the opportunity." And so he began to talk to me about their lives and how they'd had a really tough time. They had were placed in orphanages when they were young, and then later in foster homes. They'd had a pretty tough upbringing. He spoke about their relationship and how how characterized by struggle it was. I hadn't been so good to her sometimes. In fact, he'd been quite abusive. It took a while for this story to come out. It takes a while to listen to these things, some hours in this case. But after we were done, I said, "You know, Rusty, why don't we go upstairs and see your sis?" So we went up to the room, and he could barely enter the room, you know. He came around the edge of the bed, pulled up a chair close to her. You could see he was scared. And then he turned to Stella and he said, "You know, hon, there's something I've been wanting to tell you for years, and you know I'm not so good with words, and I'm not sure I can do it right now even, you know." And she interrupted him. She put up her hand to stop him. And then she said the most extraordinary thing. She said, "You know, Rusty," she said, "here at the hospice, I have somebody who bathes me. I have somebody who feeds me. I'm surrounded by love. There's no blame." It was the most extraordinary moment of forgiveness I've ever witnessed. Just beautiful. And you know, Stella understood something, I think, near the end of her life. She understood that to forgive means to put down old pain. And so many of us, you know, we do this, don't we, Bella? We carry around some old hurt for years and years and years. I think of it like a hot coal that we've been squeezing our hands around. And the forgiveness is the process of setting down that coal. I think it's a way of freeing ourselves from old pain. And I think Stella understood that in dying, she wanted to be free. She didn't want to carry this into her dying, so she forgave her brother. An extraordinary moment, you know. And I think these kinds of moments happen in hospice care all the time. I don't think they're so unusual, actually, because I think the conditions in around the time of dying are so special as to cause people to set down their old defenses that they've been carrying around for so many years. And then just people meet and
Well, this might be an opportune time to take our break. We'll be coming back in a minute after letting you know that you're listening to Alternative Currents on WERU-FM 89.9 Blue Hill and 102.9 Bangor, listener-supported community radio. Today's interview with Frank Ostaseski, founder of the Zen Hospice in San Francisco, Zen Hospice Project. We will be back in just a couple of minutes. Okay. Hi, Frank.
Hi.
You and I are taking a break, too. Yeah, Joel just came in and said, "Yeah, why don't we just give it a rest for a minute and give you guys time to talk and see where you want to take it. So is the direction of it okay with you so far?
It's fine. I do have a question for you about these stories. You know, they take a little while to,
right.
to tell, of course.
Right.
And in an hour program, maybe there's enough time to actually use them.
Yeah, I mean, it's, it. Yeah.
I think they're sort of great because you don't hear these things so much.
Exactly right. Yeah, I do think it's a good idea. And the hour is, it's half over, and so it usually seems like the second half tends to slide downhill quicker than the uphill on the first half. And after 6 years of doing this, I don't know why that seems true, but it kind of does. But I think we're doing well as far
as... You're doing very well. You're at the 20... We have 24 minutes
okay.
before
okay.
it's yeah. we're done, so there you go.
We have 24 minutes
24
remaining.
Total, right.
Okay, all right. So, yeah... So.
And Bella, I'm happy to have a kind of exchange with you too. I mean, when I the one of the challenges.